Chancery Court had jurisdiction for two reasons. First, Gibson was dead, and his estate was a chancery matter. Second, he had a child under the age of 18. The legal business of minors belonged in Chancery Court. Gibson also had three children who were not minors. The lawsuit could have been filed in either circuit or chancery, one of 100 great quirks in Mississippi law. Ray had once asked the judge to explain this enigma, and as usual, the answer was simply, "We have the greatest court system in the country." Every old chancellor believed this. Giving lawyers the choice of where to sue was not peculiar to any state. Forum shopping was a game played on the national map. But when a lawsuit by a widow living in rural Mississippi against a mammoth Swiss company that created a drug produced in Uruguay was filed in the Chancery Court of Hancock County, a red flag was raised. The federal courts were in place to deal with such far-flung disputes, and Meyer Brack and its phalanx of lawyers tried gallantly to remove the case. Judge Attlee held firm, as did the federal judge. Local defendants were included, thus removal to federal court could be denied. Reuben Attlee was in charge of the case, and as he pushed the matter to trial, his patience with the defense lawyers wore thin. Ray had to smile at some of his father's rulings. They were terse, brutally to the point, and designed to light a fire under the hordes of lawyers scrambling around the defendants. The modern-day rules about speedy trials had never been necessary in Judge Attlee's courtroom. It became evident that Ryaks was a bad product. Patton French found two experts who blasted the drug, and the experts defending it were nothing but mouthpieces for the company. Ryaks lowered cholesterol to amazing levels. It had been rushed through the approvals, then dumped into the marketplace where it became extremely popular. Tens of thousands of kidneys had now been ruined, and Mr. Patton French had Meyer Brack pinned to the mat. The trial lasted for 8 days. Against the objections of the defense, the proceedings began each morning precisely at 8:15, and they often ran until 8 at night, prompting more objections, which Judge Attlee ignored. Ray had seen this many times. The judge believed in hard work, and with no jury to pamper, he was brutal. His final decision was dated 2 days after the last witness testified, a shocking blow for judicial promptness. Evidently, he had remained in Bay St. Louis and dictated a 4-page ruling to the court reporter. This, too, did not surprise Ray. The judge loathed procrastination in deciding cases. Plus, he had his notes to rely on. For 8 days of nonstop testimony, the judge must have filled 30 legal pads. His ruling had enough detail to impress the experts. The family of Cleet Gibson was awarded $1.1 million in actual damages, the value of his life, according to an economist. And to punish Meyer Brack for pushing such a bad product, the judge awarded $10 million in punitive damages. The opinion was a scathing indictment of corporate recklessness and greed, and it was quite obvious that Judge Attlee had become deeply troubled by the practices of Meyer Brack. Even so, Ray had never known his father to resort to punitive damages. There was the usual flurry of post-trial motions, all of which the judge dismissed with brusque paragraphs. Meyer Brack wanted the punitive damages taken out. Patton French wanted them increased. Both sides received a written tongue-lashing. Oddly, there was no appeal. Ray kept waiting for one. He flipped through the post-trial section twice, then dug through the entire drawer again. It was possible the case had been settled afterward, and he made a note to ask the clerk. A nasty little fight erupted over the fees. Patton French had a contract signed by the Gibson family that gave him 50% of any recovery. The judge, as always, felt that was excessive. In chancery, the fees were within the sole discretion of the judge. 33% had always been his limit. The math was easy to do, and Mr. French fought hard to collect his well-earned money. His honor didn't budge. The Gibson trial was Judge Attlee at his finest, and Ray felt both proud and sentimental. It was difficult to believe it had taken place almost a year and a half earlier, when the judge was suffering from diabetes, heart disease, and probably cancer, though the latter was 6 months from being discovered. He admired the old warrior. With the exception of one lady who was eating a melon at her desk and doing something else online, the clerks were off at lunch. Ray left the place and went to find a library.